Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, September the 1st. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken, and you're listening to me on WVEWLP 107.7 FM Brattleboro Community Radio. You're also checking out This Show Is So Gay alongside all the other fine podcasts found at clickexpose.com. And as always, I am broadcasting with pride worldwide on qnation.fm. I cannot believe it's September already, but I'm just going to ignore it and jump right into the show. So one of the cool things that we like to do on this show, for you loyal listeners, you know this already, is that we like to have our great, awesome guests and people that you know all around the world, Indigo Girls and people from NPR. And we also like to feature just as amazing folks that you might not have heard of, but you sure as heck should. So we're going to kick off this show with our first guest. Guest, are you ready?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, good. Let me introduce you. Todd Shalom is the founder of Elastic City, which we are going to talk about. He works with text, sound, and image. His solo work includes improvisational music performances, sound walks, poetry readings, installations, photography, and sleepovers. Sleepovers. We'll talk about that, too. Todd Shalom, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. How's it going?
How you doing, Todd?
All right.
Good. So, Todd, what is Elastic City?
Elastic City is a project that started in May where I give and commission artists to give conceptual poetic walks through the city, through New York City.
Okay.
Artists give walks on everything from, like, for instance, we give sound walks where we walk around and listen to sounds that we don't generally pay attention to. An artist gives walks. He's a performance artist, Nigel Smith. He gives walks where we walk around, let's say, like, City Hall area, and the monuments in City Hall don't speak to our own experience. You know, they're historical. They're of old white men sitting on buildings. So we actually make monuments with our bodies,
wow.
In public space together. So these are really experiential tours, experiential walks, as opposed to walking tours, I should say.
So one of the walks, tell me if I'm wrong, was perhaps called the Dirty Gay Sound Walk.
I had a feeling you'd bring that up.
Now, Todd, who would have led that walk?
I led that walk.
Look at that! And now you're on the show. And can I read the description of that walk?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. 40 years post-Stonewall, and the NYPD is still entrapping gay men for soliciting prostitutes at adult video stores, a.k.a. bookstores, around the city. Join me, and I assume that me is you, Todd, while we walk around the 14th Street vicinity with focused awareness to the sounds around us. What's the sound of gay today, and where does gay history echo in the present soundscape? On this 90-minute participatory sound walk, we'll actively listen to the bars and video stores in Chelsea, the leather menagerie on Christopher Street, and the late-night crowds at the piers. All are welcome, 21 plus, please. How did you come up with the idea for the Dirty Gay Sound Walk?
Well, I've been giving sound walks for a while, since, I guess, like 05 or so. And I wanted to push on it, and I figured, you know, after reading about, you know, how the NYPD was entrapping men, that why don't I actually use the sound walk more? You know, there's a politic in the sound walk. I mean, we're essentially listening to the sounds around us. It's a bit more nuanced, though. It's up to us to kind of make our own decisions, what sounds we choose to make, what sounds we want in our lives. And I thought, you know, given that, for instance, these bookstores, these video stores are generally visual places, what happens when we turn our attention to sound?
Look at that.
And sort of, you know, what's the politics? You know, what are the politics and the sounds that we're listening to?
Now, how was the attendance?
It was really good. We got written up in on the blog for Butt Magazine, which helped. That was the premiere of the walk, so that definitely helped. And, I mean, it was a pretty diverse crowd, mostly male.
Okay.
Although there were some women there as well. I mean, that walk's been great. I've done about 4 times. This past time was over Pride weekend. I think that's how it's going to continue. I think it's going to be a Pride thing.
So if someone asked you, Todd, what is the sound of gay today, how would you answer that?
Well, it depends, because, I mean, it's really all about today. I mean, it's about the present moment that you're in.
Okay.
So when we took our walk on Pride, you know, over Pride weekend, you know, we didn't expect that there'd be an impromptu street celebration outside of Stonewall.
Right.
And so that provided us with, like, a carnivalesque atmosphere. We also go into, like, a sex shop, and we listen to and really kind of make a composition with the sounds that are in that store. On that walk as well, we go to Julius, which is the oldest running gay bar.
I remember.
Yeah.
The first gay bar I'd ever been to in my life.
No way, really?
I swear to you, when I was a first year, second semester first year student at NYU, Julius's, I sat out on the stoop and didn't know that conveyed to others that I perhaps wanted money for services I was not willing to provide.
Well, I was going to say, I bet, because right across the street from that bar is this sort of stairway that a lot of guys would stand at. And, you know, it's changed a bit as the neighborhood has gentrified this and that. But that was definitely a big, you know, cruising spot for men looking for prostitutes. So I think it's wonderful that your first gay bar included... you know, a solicitation.
Yeah, I think it's at this point in the show that I like to pause to just say hi to my parents, hi to Todd's parents, and let's keep going. So, Todd, I had this really cool conversation with two students today that I wanted to tell you about and get your take on. I was sitting with two students at lunch, and we were just talking about art, and they're creating art. And one of the students was so insistent that he be known as a queer artist. And another one was so insistent, who also is a student who identifies as queer, but the second student, both of whom who were gay, the second student said, no, I do not want that label in front of the word artist. That conveys something different. What do you think about artists who label themselves as queer artists?
That's interesting. I mean, it depends on how you see yourself, really. I mean, sure, I'm a queer artist, but I am also, you know, a performance artist, and also this, and also that. You know, I mean, I have trouble with labels to begin with, because the moment that I put a label on myself, I want to break out of it.
Right.
But so that said, sure, I consider myself a queer artist in that I'm queer. My work has a queerness to it. Sometimes it's overt, and other times it's more subtle. But it's not the only identity. I think it's important that even if someone is labeling themselves as, quote, a queer artist, that, you know, they have something else going on to inform their work. You know, I think just in terms of making dynamic and challenging work, I think you have to continue to push at whatever labels you're choosing to put on yourself.
Now, at what point did you realize, because we talk a lot about art on the show and just about the challenges in making it as an artist and pursuing that as a dream, at what point did you realize, you know what, this is it. This is what I want to devote my life to. I am an artist.
Well, I was working in the music industry. I mean, I went to school in Boston, and I graduated, and then, well, I needed to come out, like, because I was kind of repressed in business school.
Okay.
And took a trip down to New Orleans, where I went to my first gay bar, which was Oz, and I saw all these guys in dirty white hats, and I was like, is this a gay bar? Like, what's going on here? Anyway, I was living in New York and working in the music industry, and then I was like, you know, I really would rather, you know, make art than work for the artists at this point, and I really felt that. And with coming out, it was really empowering, and I felt like I kind of couldn't hold back from what I needed to say. So poetry was really kind of my way into art school, my way into art. And so I then went to school for poetry and to an art school. So that was my way to actually, like, get into sound and performance. And then it was through there that I was like, all right, you know, I consider myself an artist. I mean, I think everyone's an artist, whether or not everyone has something artistic in them, whether or not they choose to expand on it or not. So yeah, I mean, I've been making work since 8 years or so, and then of course only the past like 4 or 5 years am I actually proud of the work I've been making. But
there you go. Now, I am severely chastised by some of my fellow professors at the college because I tend to only like my art with a plot. Is that okay?
Art with a plot?
I need a plot, Todd.
Uh huh. Sure. So you want some sort of narrative. You want something to take you through.
I like that you made that sound a lot more dignified than you know, I need a plot.
Well, I mean, a plot, that would be if it's written, it seems, or, you know, well, or maybe something theatrical, sure.
Indeed.
So you're not into, I mean, like, in terms of visual art, what about, like, abstract work?
Yeah, not so good with that, Todd.
Right.
Not gonna lie. Not gonna lie.
Sure. I mean, and it's funny because I'm kind of the opposite. I like work that actually gives me freedom. And the walks are curious because there is a narrative. I mean, you're being led by someone, and hopefully that counterbalances itself with, you know, exercises and different things that we do to find your own way in, as opposed to, you know, being blindly led by someone.
Gotcha. So if I go on one of these walks, I can intermingle with some of those freaky abstract people.
Yeah, cool. Maybe you might find that you actually like it more than you thought.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. But what is coming up? What's coming up for Elastic City?
What's coming up? Well, we just announced the three walks in the fall. One is led by a font designer. I'm not sure if you saw the movie Helvetica.
I did see the movie Helvetica.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Well, a font designer, Ksenia Samarskaya, who works for the company Hofler Ferrer Jones, and they're featured heavily in that movie. She's actually leading a walk where we walk around Brighton Beach in Williamsburg with a careful attention to the signage, the urban signage. So, for instance, you know, how do you actually make these signs? And in figuring them out, what are the fonts that are used? And what goes
that
into
is
determining
so
the font?
Cool. That is and pretty so, cool.
Thanks. And we actually... we actually then look to that and see, you know, is it harmonious? Is the signage harmonious with the neighborhood that it's in, for instance? Or is there some sort of, you know, is there tension there? And we investigate that. Another artist, her name's Inat Menoff. She's an Israeli urban designer who lives in New York. And she's giving a walk on homelessness. I'm sorry, homesickness. But the idea is that as opposed to homesickness that would generally work around nostalgia, her walk is around, like, the city is sick, our home is sick. And so we kind of diagnose the different ways in which the city is sick in order to kind of find our way in or potential remedies for that.
Wow.
And then finally, my friend Juan and I, Juan Bettencurthy, is a Colombian artist, who's actually coming over shortly, and we're going to discuss our walk, which is a lucky walk, where we go to places and rid them of bad luck and make them lucky.
Wow.
So this is fun because we get to, he's kind of witchy, and we get to use folk ritual and superstition to kind of lead people through the space and essentially make it a lucky place.
Now, when did you say the Vermont walk was?
The Vermont walk is when you invite me up there.
All right, so everyone, there will be a Vermont walk at the beginning of November. Stay tuned for that. And where do folks go to learn more about this cool stuff that you're doing? I want to go on a walk.
Yeah, you would go to elastic-city.com. So it's Elastic City. You can also just, like, type it in Google. It'll take you there. And, yeah, that's where you'd go, and you'd sign up. And, you know, some walks are free, and others cost usually between $20 and $30. And, yeah, that's where you go.
The Vermont discount, I heard, is pretty darn good.
It is. It is. I think, yeah, first the date needs to be set, and then the time, and then eagerly awaiting planning a walk in Vermont. Hopefully during the foliage, because, God, I remember being up there during that time.
See, there were so many details in that. That wasn't abstract at all. That had a total narrative to it. I enjoyed that. That was very good. And I have to say, I will tell you that I know that you get reviews from all over the place, and I've been keeping up with your reviews and reading them online. And there are a lot of artists out there who completely subsume the bad reviews, I guess there are no bad reviews, but an extraordinary critical review. And there was just one that I can't even remember who it was from, and you owned it, and you said, hey, well, we got covered. And I thought, I respected that, Todd.
Oh, well, that was the Wall Street Journal. I mean, you know, they're the Rupert Murdoch-owned paper. If they liked us, I think that would be problematic.
There you go.
You know?
So this turned out to be a good thing.
Well, whatever. I mean, they say any press is good press. I don't know if I believe that, but at the same time, seriously, we're happy with whatever. I'm just happy that this project is out there and that people are coming on walks and experiencing places in new ways. That's really all I can ask.
All right. Well, we're going to come up with a good name for the Vermont Walk, too. It's got to be clever.
All right.
The Dirty Vermont Walk. Something like that. I don't know. Todd, you're doing pretty cool stuff, and I'm pretty happy that we can have you on the show to talk about it.
Thanks, Ken. This has been great.
Okay, cool. We'll talk more. Todd Shalom, right, everybody. Thanks, Todd.
All right, take it easy.
Bye. Mountains beyond mountains, and there's no end in sight.
songs I've never played before on this show. That's very exciting. That was Arcade Fire, as requested by tonight's guest, second guest. Guest, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Let me introduce you. Zach Rosen is the editor-in-chief of thenewgay.net. It's an online publication for alternative queer events and ideas. He previously worked for the Washington Blade, one of my favoritist publications in the whole wide world. He's had quite the active summer, which we're going to talk about, with stories of him posing nude and being arrested, which are two completely separate stories. He is a listener-requested guest, although he was a little incredulous that that was the case, but I assure you, he was a listener-requested guest, and we're proud to have him here on the show. Zach Rosen, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. So, for folks that don't know, tell everyone what thenewgay.net is, and is not to be confused with thenewgay.com, which is a completely different website.
Yes, thenewgay.com is a porn website that will make you throw up.
Yes.
No matter who you are.
Yes.
It's designed to make you yak.
And perhaps get me in trouble at work. Yes, Zach.
Or to make contributors' grandparents look at it when they try to see what website they've been writing.
Nice.
thenewgay.net, which I co-founded and now the editor-in-chief of, is kind of based on the idea that when you come out, frequently you're given a choice of either kind of change who you are to fit into the existing and often very stifling mainstream queer culture, or remove yourself from it and kind of be the token gay guy in a group of mostly straight friends, or, you know, kind of dabble in gay culture when you're looking for people to sleep with or date or anything like that. And, you know, you should be able to fully integrate yourself into the queer world without really having to fundamentally change yourself. So we have an unofficial tagline, which is for everyone, over the rainbow, over being in italics, and an unofficial tagline of be gay and be yourself.
Nice. Nice.
Thank you.
Now, how would you define what an alternative queer is? What does an alternative queer look like?
Well, right now I think all queers become a big buzzword. People throw alternative queer parties, alternative queer this, and that kind of alternative queer probably dresses like me, which is a lot of tight t-shirts, a lot of, you know, thrift store clothes, skinny jeans, stuff like that. But I think that's kind of an unfortunate shorthand. What it really means is the dictionary definition of the word alternative, which is there's kind of a accepted way that things are, an accepted way that queer people are spoken to and catered to and parties are thrown for them. And alternative just means having options that are different from that. Otherwise, you just end up creating a second mainstream, which then you have the same problem all over again.
I don't want to be in the mainstream.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with the mainstream. If I enjoyed it, then I wouldn't have a problem. And people that do, you know, like Britney Spears, like techno dance music, stuff like that, are fine. Like, they're going to be fine for the rest of their lives in terms of how the media caters to them, in terms of how parties are thrown, how they're talked to, and things like that. But if you're not, then you really don't usually have anywhere else to go.
But I'm not going to lie, Zach. I do not own a pair of skinny jeans.
Well, then I'm going to hang up right now.
It was great talking to you, and good luck with the website. Good times. So, I mean, you worked for the Washington Blade. You are the editor-in-chief of thenewgay.net. Where do you've seen the evolution of how we're sharing information, how we're sharing ideas. I feel like this is a job interview question. Zach, where do you see this media?
Where's my parachute?
Who did move your cheese, Zach? Where do you see this in 10 years? How is this evolving?
The New Gay or queer media?
Queer media.
Oh, wow. Well,
or the new gay.
Well, those are kind of intertwined questions.
Good.
Worst case scenario, queer media, I think that nothing, the way that gay people live, specifically white gay men, which I am one and can speak most freely about, just the kind of caricature of the white gay man has not been forced to change in 30 years. If you read books from 30 years ago, the kind of heuristics or shortcuts people use to create a gay character and talk to gay people has been the same. It's, okay, gay people like martinis and dance music and bars, and that's what they do.
That's what we do.
Right, so that's how we'll treat them. And I think the media is the worst in portraying people that way. Much of the mainstream gay media, if you don't like these six or seven things, like working for The Blade, The Blade is an incredible newspaper, incredible resource, but the culture coverage was always, I know this, I created it, it was like a template. It's like one drag queen,
right?
One campy movie or play, one happy hour, and then you dust off your hands and go home for the day.
And then there was the every other month lesbian event.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we covered a lesbian last month. What are you talking about? If you want again this week? What's the trans person?
We're good till November.
Right. Right, when your, you know, Google calendar puts up a lesbian alarm and you cover it again.
There must be a camping event there somewhere.
Right. So where I would like to see gay media in 10 years, and this is going to sound really simple, but it's not, is that I would like to see it reflect the way that gay and queer people actually live.
Right.
Because right now, gay media does not. It reflects, it's like a lifestyle publication almost. It reflects the way a very, very, very small number of people, you know, live their lives and the things they do. And, you know, even words you use to talk to people, fabulous. Fabulous will never go away. I would like to see a gay publication in 10 years never use the F word, you know?
Right.
I would hang up my hat and become an accountant tomorrow if that happened, if I got a signed affidavit from someone. But if that does not happen, if that's not the tack the gay media takes, then what I'd like to see the New Gay become is like an alt-weekly almost, like the Village Voice,
right,
Reader in Chicago, to cater to people who do not want to give up, do not want to check being gay at the door when they go out of the house at the night, but also don't want to be pandered to or condescended to or just excluded in the way that it's portrayed.
Yeah, we had, gosh, a while back, close to the new year, we had Aaron Hicklin, the editor-in-chief of Out Magazine, was on the show, and we talked about this a lot. So what does the glossy cover mean? And is it all in the off chance that a straight person might pick up the magazine and say, oh, this is palatable? And that's a struggle. That's a struggle to put that out there in a way that, so how does the person in the Midwest pick this up and is able to access it?
Right.
So, I don't know. That's something that I struggle with, even having subscriptions to some of these magazines, that often when I get them, I say, well, gosh, this is the hot list. I'm not on the hot list. I don't have any of these things, and this is not my life.
I don't know who these people are, literally. You're talking about these people as if I'm just supposed to know who they am.
Right.
Who they am, sorry. I'm a writer. As if I'm supposed to know who they are, and I don't.
New queer media doesn't care about grammar.
Right.
We're post-grammar.
Right. We're just a series of cave paintings.
We'll use four ellipses if we want to. Right. We don't care.
Right.
Now, you, sir, when you started out the summer, did you think to yourself, I'm going to have a really active summer? Well, first, let's back up. Do you consider that you perhaps had quite the active summer that the rest of us all know about?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I did one really salacious kind of attention-grabbing thing this summer, and one that I feel is deeply important to my life and, you know, the queer cause. And the second one is the one no one knows about, in my opinion.
Well, are you okay with us covering both?
Oh, of course. I'm actually at the Woolly Mammoth Theater here in Washington, D.C., because they have a play called The Vibrator Play.
Nice.
Largely about sex technology. So I just sat on a panel and talked about my penis in front of about 40 strangers. And if I could do that with them looking at me, then I can do it here on the radio.
Awesome.
Kind of me and you.
Well, then let's start with salacious. I feel like that was the natural transition. Now, chronologically, the salacious one was first, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So for folks that don't know, you wanted to go to to be the blogger, right, at this Netroots conference.
Yeah. An organization called Freedom to Marry offered 3 scholarships to send people to the Netroots Nation conference, which is kind of a big online organizing progressive activism conference that's happening this year in Vegas. So they picked the 10 people based on their merits. You know, they went through the writing they had submitted and their profiles and said, okay, if you 10 people, now it's your responsibility to get votes in any way that you can using the internet and social networking and new media. And some would say I took that just a little too far.
I disagree, but go ahead.
A couple inches too far. Because I really, really wanted to go to this. I have no money, no visibility, no one knows who I am, so I just couldn't pass up an opportunity like this. And if I could do it in a way that maybe I'd get more people to my website, I was going to jump on that. So to speak. So what I did was I contacted someone I know at the website Fleshbot, which is Gawker's gay porn blog.
Okay.
Rather, gay.fleshbot.com, which is the gay arm of Gawker's porn blog, and said, tell your readers that if they vote for me and I win this scholarship, I will publish a picture of myself with an erection on your website.
There you go.
And it happened.
And how many
and
votes came off that site?
I do not know.
Okay.
I was scared to ask, because I thought that would have sounded egotistical. I know that at least 20,000 people.
Look at that.
Saw the picture, just based on, you know, they show you how many people have clicked on the post on Fleshbot.
Now, did you have any reservations?
Initially, but, you know, I've kind of based this whole project on the fact that, I should say my heroes in the whole kind of queer universe are Dan Savage and Margaret Cho, because
they've
built successful careers and respectable careers, respectable in that they do really good work, not respectable in that people can, you know, the Republican white can respect them. I'm just being honest and open about sexuality. And I think that so much of the gay rights movement right now is predicated on trading our sexuality for our rights. So if we keep our dicks in our pants and comb our hair and wear a suit, then we'll get rights. We'll be able to marry and not get fired from our jobs. And I really don't like that as a compromise.
Right. And you wrote 3 reminders for, well, it was posted on Fleshbot, I think, but you said it's things that Fleshbot readers probably know. 3 reminders. Number 1, gay men's bodies aren't shameful things. Number 2, gay sex is natural and pretty damn fun. And number 3, no one ever won equal rights, and let's focus on this one, no one ever won equal rights by keeping their oppressors comfortable.
Right.
Well, that's pretty darn well said.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
There you go. Now, did you work out like a madman before you took these pictures?
Yes. I'll be honest, I did. I'm one of those guys, some people hate me for saying this, if I don't exercise, I shrink.
There you go.
Just as annoying for me as the other people who
get bigger. I try to be diplomatic as a host. Inside, I'm seething. So that just kind of annoys me. So that was the salacious one. But then, I was going to say on the other side of the spectrum, but I think that's silly and sets up a dichotomy that I don't really like. So I'm going to move past that. There was the perhaps moment during the summer when you kind of sort of got arrested.
Yes.
The most important question first. How did you call home and tell your family that you got arrested?
Well, that's a funny story. Before it happened, we filled out a form with three numbers. What I thought it was emergency numbers. I actually ended up going to jail for the night. Here's the people you call. So I said, okay, if I get hurt, call this person. You know, something else, call this person. And I thought what I said is something, if I go to jail, call my sister. Nice. Jail meaning overnight, prison.
Okay.
I'm held. But what I really put down was, when this happens, call my sister. Regardless. Which means that my sister got a call in the middle of, you know, I think she was in an airport coming home from somewhere. And it said, Zach's all right. He's in jail. He's fine. We'll keep you updated. So, of course, as a Jewish mother in training, she had a heart attack and screamed at me the next day over the phone.
Oh, my Jewish mother would kill me. Did she call your parents right away?
No, she did not do that. We have kind of a code about those things.
I love that you need to have a code about this could perhaps happen. Now, we actually covered this story on the show. I think, what day of the week did it happen? It was on a Wednesday, wasn't it?
Wednesday, yeah.
We covered this maybe 2 hours after it happened. And one of my favorite parts about this story is that there was a line, and I wish I had pulled it up for this, but there was a line in there where someone said that you all had a conversation beforehand. And please don't tell me that this is wrong because we based our whole show off of it. let's support things that aren't true. That you guys had a conversation beforehand and decided who would be the expendables.
Yes. How did you know that?
That was in a story. It was in a story that I read. And I would like to know, because we...
I think it was a riskable.
A riskable. It was totally a riskable.
Right. The Expendables is the movie that just came out.
So, yes, it was... You guys sat down beforehand, decided who is a riskable. What was that conversation like?
Well, basically, the question was who wants to get arrested. It comes down to this. I don't want to... It's not like we've plotted for weeks and weeks and weeks. But
right.
The idea was that if this is going to happen, you know, a lot of people are going to go in. We want other people outside to know that if we are in jail, someone is looking out for us. We're able to call them. If I don't come home in 2 days, they know. You know, although my boyfriend is out of town at the time, so really I could have not been home for 3 days and no one would have known.
Right.
So basically, yeah, who, for, you know, things based on personal comfort, the career you're in, everything like that, who thinks they want to get arrested for this cause. And as soon as that became an option, it was really something I knew I had to do. Like what I said on Fleshbutt, I think... HRC is a very good organization. It's a necessary one, but it's not going to be... We're not going to be successful if you don't have the other end represented. You have to have both. And you have someone kind of playing in the inside and being polite, and you need someone else to be in people's faces and be radical. I compare the only real, other civil rights movement I have to draw on is the one that happened in the 60s.
Right.
And with that, people didn't just keep asking for things they wanted and hope they were given them. They demanded them because it was something they needed to have and deserved to have as people.
I want a business card, though, that says Zach Rosen, Riskable.
Right. I'll see what I can do for you
about
that.
That would be awesome. That would be really cool. And I guess we should back up and tell people, hey, Zach, what'd you get arrested for?
Me and seven other people went into the rotunda of the Capitol building, which is about 10 feet away from Nancy Pelosi's office, and began holding up signs that I believe said, ENDA now, meaning Employment Non-Discrimination Act now, and Nancy Pelosi, this is your warning. And then we sat on the floor, and we started drumming our hands on the floor, and we chanted a bunch of things and did some shouting. And we were given three warnings that if we kept that up, we would be arrested.
Okay.
And then we were arrested.
There you go. Now, you wrote, I'm going to read some words that you wrote because I love this. You wrote after this, what I did Wednesday felt better than anything I did last week, including a couple blowjobs.
And last week being Netroots Nation.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
Just to clarify.
There are talented, engaged people. It was amazing how I just flew right by that. There are talented, engaged people in this world who are dying for a chance to make change, and they should not be told by anyone that their tactics are wrong. I've been out of jail for more than 24 hours, and that feeling hasn't left me yet. Even better, I still feel it as I sit here in this chair. Do you still have some of those feelings? Because it's been a little bit more than 24 hours. How has that changed you, that experience? Dude, you're riskable.
Yes. it made me feel less expendable, oddly enough.
There you go.
Well, what I said, the reason I said that about Netroots is Netroots is a great thing, but so much of the queer conversations that happened there were just debates about what the right tactics were. And, you know, if you're trying to build a city and someone wants to build the park and someone else wants to be a school teacher, you don't start berating the school teacher about why isn't she helping plant trees in the park. You just don't. It's stupid.
Right.
Very objectively, commonsensically stupid. But when it comes to gay rights, that conversation happens 60 times a day in 60 different forums. And kind of going into Netroots, which, again, great thing. I'm glad I went. But it was kind of like before we got there, four topics were decided upon to be the important topics, all capital right. letters. And it was, I believe, ENDA, immigration rights, marriage.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, DADT, yeah. Which are all really, really important things that people should be working on. But the whole great thing about being queer, being gay, is that we're everyone. There's this whole range of people with this whole range of causes. And people shouldn't be discouraged doing anything they can do to make a difference.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't be discouraged from riding your city every day to get a speed bump in front of your house.
Right.
Which I think came from an episode of The Simpsons.
Well, see, and I've certainly run into some blocks and some gay folks who are critical of, I pour my energy into safety in schools. That's, you know, that's what my PhD is in. This is what I work on. I'm all about how can we make schools safer for LGBT kids? And to be told continuously, yes, but the topic du jour is don't ask, don't tell. Well, that's great. That's not where my passion is.
Right.
I don't get that.
Actual
I don't get
organizations,
why.
Giant yeah. organizations working on don't ask, don't tell. And you, if you cannot do it better than them, why not do the thing you can do better than them?
Right. And I'm a dean in Vermont. I'm not going to do it the same way they're going to do it. It's kind of different. Now, how about this past weekend? What'd you do this past weekend, Zach? Did you hang out with anyone, call anyone on the phone? Hey, did you go any political rallies? Any political rallies this weekend?
Oh, yeah, I did. I blanked out on that. I blacked it out, I should say, because it was so terrible. I went to the Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin teabagger rally.
Exciting.
Which made me feel terrible about being an American, about being a person, about being there. It was this maelstrom of terrible emotions.
How close did you get?
Oh, God, half a mile?
Okay.
I could hear Sarah. I could hear all the don't you knows.
Don't you know?
I could hear all the word. You know, I could hear all the platitudes loud and clear, but I couldn't actually see anything.
Now, a bit of a provocative title in what you wrote about this past week's political rally there on thenewgay.net. What was the title of your piece?
I believe it was The New American Civil War.
Yeah.
Which I changed from The Gospel According to Palin Christ.
Why? Why did you change that?
I didn't write about her as much as I thought I was going to.
Okay. How bizarre of an experience was that?
It was more scary than anything else. I'm Jewish, and some people say there's a name for it, some rule of blogging, that if you talk about rights, there's a very limited amount of time between when rights come up and when someone brings up Nazi Germany.
Right.
Which I think is funny. I don't remember that it's something principle. But, you know.
I learned that in Hebrew school, Zach. I don't know what Hebrew school you went to, but it's part of my heritage.
K-A-M, Isaiah, Israel. Thank you very much.
All right. There's shout out.
Right. But, you know, when things are not going right in the country, people really like having kind of the balm of a scapegoat. And I see that happening loud and clear here. And that scapegoat is just pretty much, at this point, everyone who's different. It's not, I don't think we could allow it to just be the Jews again, but the way that immigrants are being treated, gay people right. of color, this widespread distrust that somehow our president does not deserve to be president because people think he wasn't born in America because he's not white is crazy.
Right.
And that's just gaining so much traction, so many followers, and it's frightening. I really think the blue state, red state division in this country is getting worse and worse. It doesn't lead to an all-out civil war. We're going to have two very, very different Americas, even worse than we have right now.
Right.
I mean, I almost feel like you're going to need papers to go to Arizona.
It's great for me to read things like this only because I'm in such a bizarre place living in Vermont and,
right.
and just not having a sense that, oh, yes, this
Ben
happens.
And Jerry, your neighbors.
Exactly. Pass the granola. What's the tea part? I don't know what that is. It's a lift ticket for everyone. So, wow. Yeah, no. Did you go with a bunch of other gay folks?
I went with one other friend of mine, and we were both not feeling well. And it was so hot. So we hung out for 20 minutes and then got frightened and left and went to get some tea.
There you go. Okay. Well, but that's good. It's good to hear these things. I often advocate it is good to hear these things because you need to know what other people are saying.
There's a big groundswell happening, and I just keep using this word frightening because it scares the holy shit out of me.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's not just a fringe movement anymore.
Wow. That's crazy. And even more important of a political question that you pose that I think is important that you answer for all our listeners. Zach, would the Scissor Sisters be popular if they were ugly?
Probably not.
You don't think so?
Unless they were so aware of being ugly that they played it up. I brought up Leslie Hall and Harmar Superstar, who are two,
yes,
I think, queer-friendly artists who... Leslie Hall is basically... It's a woman named Leslie Hall who's created as a kind of an active performance art, this character Leslie Hall, who's this kind of big... What's the word? Not buffettoed. Bouffanted,
yes.
Midwestern, shiny tracksuit wearing, you know, playing up Midwest. And she, you know, is purposely not playing into what Americans think is attractive. And so it's a wink and a nod. And you can do that very well. You can be Harmar Superstar, who's this, you know, hairy, kind of Dove Charney-looking man, I think also in tights. But if you're just a regular-the-mill, regular-looking person, and you do what Scissor Sisters do, I don't think it would work out very well.
Okay.
You wouldn't fill the AR Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C.
You might fill the 50-person Latches Theater here in Brattleboro, Vermont. I'm just saying.
You might.
It's not guaranteed, though. Trust me. All right, we got to talk about your musical selections. You ready to talk about your music?
Yeah. Definitely.
Now, this is... I enjoy this. I enjoy when a guest comes on, and it's four songs that... Holy cow, have I never heard of. So now I have four new songs on my iPod.
Oh, great. So, what do people usually play?
Gosh, the Black Eyed Peas is coming up perhaps a little too often. We had Howard Bragman on the show, was that 2 weeks ago? And
The publicist,
nice. Yeah. And we had some. He had some cool stuff. And that, again, it was that whole conversation about, he's pretty mainstream, and he had just that day signed The Flight Attendant.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do with that, because it's like, I don't know. It's the whole struggle of how do I want to be represented, but also the struggle of it's impossible to represent me. So,
right.
I don't know. But yes, a lot of mainstream music. Every now and then we get some stuff that we haven't heard of, but you did well. You did very well. So this is the part of the show, Zach Rosen, where you tell our listening audience who requested that you be on the show.
That is amazing. I love that.
I'm just going to keep mentioning it for you then. You tell our listening audience what these songs, we'll just do a couple of them, what these songs say about Zach Rosen.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll start off with Sprawl 2, Mountain Beyond Mountains, Mountains Beyond Mountains by Arcade Fire. What does Sprawl 2 say about Zach Rosen?
Well, I actually thought this all out very carefully, because this is a queer radio show.
Indeed.
But mostly queer, you know, queer as a stretch music. And I think that song is just incredible. Like, my boyfriend put it on for me when I was having a really, really bad day. And what people say about Arcade Fire a lot, which is that it sounds like music sounded like you were 15.
Yes.
I think a Pitchfork review said that. I think it's true. It's just they really, really have this way to just kind of make you feel like you're waiting for the bus on the way to school in November and it's raining or something like that. And that song, just besides just huge choruses, like amazing vocals, those synths, I think it's something really universal that I thought maybe a queer audience could appreciate about needing to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the whole message of the song is that you're living in the suburbs, and they have a lot of urban planning for a rock band.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, the first CD is all about neighborhoods.
Nice.
And this one's, I think they have, the first CD is Neighborhoods 1, 2, 3, and 4. This one has maybe Half-Light 1 and 2, Sprawl 1 and 2, Suburbs 1 and 2, and something else. But it's really about growing up in the suburbs and feeling so stifled and having no purpose and feeling like an outsider, which I think any gay person growing up anywhere will identify with. And then getting to the place you want to be and still feeling like you're not welcome there. I think she goes from saying, I hear these voices screaming, come and find your kind, to the voices are screaming, we don't need your kind.
That's good stuff.
I also think, no matter what you think about, you know, gay music past, if you hear strong female vocals and synths and it sounds like Stevie Nicks or Blondie, you can't really ignore the connections to kind of gay club culture from 20 years ago.
No. 20 years ago, or, you know, 5 minutes ago in some places in the city. But now, what does... Exactly. What does... Let's do two more. What does Leave Me Alone by Revolver say about Zach Rosen?
Oh, that I just pretended I was making a mix. I usually like to start out with kind of a quiet, you know, song, really quiet, pretty song to lead you in. I just thought that was a really, really well-constructed song. It's hummable. It's really... The instrumentation is interesting. The vocals are really nice. I just thought that's just a band people should know.
Okay. This is good. So we're saying that Zach Rosen is hummable.
Yeah.
That came out totally wrong. Okay.
Zach Rosen puts too much thought into his mixtape.
Yeah, that's fine. This is a good thing. This lets people get to know you better. And the last one. What does... which of Montreal song did you
Coquette,
do?
Coquette,
Coquette. Coquette, what does Coquette, Coquette say about Zach Rosen?
That's actually the song I have the least to say about. Of Montreal is just a great queer band. They sound like Prince and T-Rex and David Bowie. Kevin Barnes, the lead singer, I think identifies as kind of omnisexual or has had a lot of same-sex experiences in the past. So he's married to a woman right now. It's just really fun. I think they're really sex positive. Their last album, which is called Skeletal Lamping, was just like sexorama.
Nice.
He has this persona called Georgie Fruit, who's a black transgender woman, and he was singing about like things happening in parking lots and I'm sick of sucking the dick of the city and things like that. And they're just a really fun queer band. But even though you didn't ask me, Lovers, the other band.
We could do the other one too. Yes, Lovers.
Three queer women from Portland making really, really good music.
All right.
Really a band you should know. They remind me a lot of The Blow, and not just because they're queer ladies from Portland.
All right, so everybody should know Lovers too, and that's a song that we're going to be playing a little bit later called Boxer.
Right, you have not played Lovers yet, but
we have not. We have not. Look at all this good stuff. So now, can people become contributors at thenewgay.net?
Yes, they can. We've been an open forum from the beginning. We actually, the only way we can thrive in our mission is to get our readers to give us article content, or else it's not, a cross section of the queer spectrum. It's just me.
Okay.
It's boring.
Well, okay, I don't think so. You got the skinny jeans going on. So I assume there are contributors you've never met.
Yeah, there are. Several. Many.
That's exciting.
It's great. You go to a different city and all of a sudden there's this person you've been emailing with for a year that maybe you can stay with or get coffee with or anything. It's really great.
And more importantly, how far down am I on the list of queers to know?
Oh, number one, as soon as I can get you in the... Because I can get you in the same city and do an interview.
I'm there. That's an excuse to come down and buy some skinny jeans. Well, this is pretty cool. So it's a little bit obvious and it's kind of funny to ask, but Zach Rosen, where do folks go to learn more about all the cool stuff that you're doing?
They go to thenewgay.net.
Well, you're doing some pretty cool stuff. This is right up a lot of our listeners' alley and just talking about new media and alternative queer and just getting voices out there that... So many of the mainstream, and again, I hate that word too, but so many of the mainstream news organizations and LGBT organizations are just not letting these voices be heard as much as they need to be heard.
Being gay is something really different than it meant even 5 or 10 years ago, and if media doesn't reflect that, then a lot of people are just going to have no place to go.
There you go. Well, you're giving us some place to go. We are appreciative. You're doing good work, Zach Rosen, and you're going to keep doing this, right?
Yes, as long as people keep reading the website.
All right, thenewgay.net, Zach Rosen, an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Ken. It was great meeting you.
I will dance with another girl if you'd love to see me do. I would stand right in front of her like I'm standing right in front of you. Yes, I do. I could tell her many words of love. I would always want to tell you. I would kiss her so many times. I can never, never, never do the same to you. Leave me alone. I don't believe in friends that don't show. Secret feelings, and if you go, when I'm sleeping, I know that you'll come back and say that you leave me alone. But I can promise I will be home. I've seen enough, now I'm done. I could drive a car all night long just to meet you in the morning light. I could leave and write another song, but can't help falling out of love tonight. That don't show secret feelings, and if you go, when I'm sleeping, I know that you'll come back and say that you'll leave me alone. But I can promise I will. will be home. I've seen enough, oh please don't leave me alone. No, I can promise I will be home.
And that is Leave Me Alone by Revolver, as requested by tonight's second guest, Zach Rosen, over at thenewgay.net. Some news for you. Two guests. We didn't even get to any news tonight. Archie Comics. Hey, did you hear that Archie Comics welcomed its first gay character? Isn't that pretty cool? There have been a number of gay characters in comic books since Marvel Comics opened the door with North Star in 1992. But now a new level of acceptance has been reached as beloved comic series Archie is adding its first gay character. On September 1st, that's today, Riverdale High will be introduced to Kevin Keller, the hunky gay blonde with a V-neck and perfectly coiffed hair. Okay. Archie Comics co-CEO John Goldwater said, "The introduction of Kevin is just about keeping the world of Archie Comics current and inclusive. Archie's hometown of Riverdale has always been a safe world for everyone. I'll try to get Kevin Keller, the new Archie comic book character, on the show." That's pretty cool. That's evolution. Other stuff that's going on out there. What else was going on? There was a court in Texas. Have you ever been to Texas?
No, I haven't.
See, and you guys are like, who is he even talking to? Tell everyone who you are.
Hello, folks. I'm just sitting here. I'm DJ Private Third Eye Spencer, and
nice.
I just happened to drop on in. And your current host here was just speaking of gay characters in comic books. I would love to direct all of your attention as an intense comic book geek to the current Batwoman series.
Who is a lesbian.
Yes,
very
exactly.
Very cool. Well, over in Texas, I know that there's a lot of gay characters in the X-Men now, and it's pretty cool. Over in Texas, have you ever been to Texas?
No, I have not.
I've never been to Texas. So the Texas Fifth Court of Appeals ruled yesterday that gay and lesbian couples cannot divorce in Texas if they were married outside the state. So, folks, if you are getting married, same-sex couples, outside of Texas, and then you go to Texas and perhaps your relationship doesn't work out, you're not getting divorced in Texas. The court ruled that State District Judge Tina Callahan in Dallas overstepped her jurisdiction when she ruled a gay couple who married in Massachusetts in 2006 could get a divorce. So they overruled her. So this couple, I think this couple is now back together, despite the fact that they thought they were divorced. So that's got to be pretty alarming. I don't know what to do with that. What else? Other things. What else going on in the gay world? Tasmania. Ever been to Tasmania?
No, I can't say I have.
The Parliament of Tasmania approved a law to recognize, and I think this was just today, approved a law to recognize same-sex marriages and civil unions registered in other Australian states or countries. Tasmania.
I guess that... that tornado of a little devil is just shredded the closet door right off.
He's very gay friendly. Very gay friendly, that devil. And a study that we always like, positive studies that are saying good things. Stanford University conducted a study showing little difference in educational achievement between children raised by gay couples and those raised by married heterosexual couples. We knew that. We didn't need a study to tell us that, did we? I don't think so. That's a good thing. The study published in Demography magazine utilized the U.S. Census for their findings. The results indicated that 7% of children raised by heterosexual married couples were held back a year, while 9.5% of children living with same-sex partners repeated a grade. Well, I don't think anyone, that's not really great news that people are repeating grades. But children of gay and married couples had lower grade repetition rates than their peers raised by opposite-sex unmarried couples and single parents, according to the story. So that's pretty good. What else? Last couple news stories, and I'm going to turn it over to some training. I'm going to get trained on everything.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it.
So that's a good thing. So the big thing that's out there right now, we talk a lot on the show about school bullying, because we try to use our airwaves, and if folks don't know, you should be subscribing to our show on iTunes. We try to use our airwaves to decrease bullying in schools for gay kids. Some organizations are saying now that gay rights groups push for anti-bullying legislation and school programs is an effort to promote homosexuality to kids. any organization that says that, you're wrong and you're kind of an idiot. This was from Candy Cushman, the education analyst for Focus on the Family, which is one of the hardcore conservative Christian activist organizations. Candy said, quote, "What parents need to be aware of is there are activist groups who want to promote homosexuality to kids because they realize if they can capture hearts..." I'm not even going to read anymore. It's idiocy. So make your school safer for gay kids. It's a good thing. If you do not know, there are so many ways to get in touch with This Show Is So Gay. You can send an email to thisshowissogay@aol.com. You can go over to thisshowissogay.com and you can click on past shows. You can hear all our past guests and you can click on upcoming guests. We're booked through, my gosh, we're booked through like the middle of October with some really, really incredible guests, including Netta Ulaby of NPR, who was on the show, gosh, maybe a year and a half ago, more than that. So Netta Ulaby from NPR coming back to the show. Next week, Kathy Renna, who's been on the show. She is a media guru, and she's going to talk about LGBT visibility in the media. Excited about that. Just a lot of really cool folks coming up. So tune into the show. And then, as always, you can stroll on over to the Facebook. Are you a Facebook fan?
Yes, I am.
There you go. You can stroll on over to the Facebook, type in "This Show Is So Gay," and you can become a fan. You can like us. It's an official word. Okay, so now you got to do the tagline with me because I'm not normally alone. So this is, I'm going to teach you the tagline.
All right.
This is a big training piece for you.
All right.
This will be your lead-in every week. So the whole tagline is, why be gay when you can be, and then you say with me, so gay. That is your entire line. So get out there, folks. Thanks to Todd Shalom, who called in at the start of the show, Zach Rosen, thenewgay.net, Todd's from the Elastic City. Check out the cool things that they're doing. You guys need to get out there. You need to educate yourselves. You need to make some schools safer. You need to learn about all the cool things happening in the world. Contribute to queer media. Find out what an alternative queer is and just do things. And remember, above all else, why be gay when you can be so gay? Very good. And here's some music to play you out.
Shit, I don't think I have